The Federal Reserve on the program today, also coronavirus trade policy, and we get it. That can be rough. So we'll end with video games. From American Public Media, this is Market Class. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Tuesday, today, the 12th of May. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We begin today with an explainer, a tutorial of sorts, prompted, as these explainers often are, by something the Federal Reserve is doing. This morning, the Fed started buying something called exchange-traded funds, specifically corporate bond exchange-traded funds, known in the vernacular as ETFs. Now, what are ETFs, and why, for the first time ever, is the central bank dabbling in the corporate debt market? Marketplace's Sabri Benishour is on explainer duty today.
ETFs are like when you don't want to invest in just one stock, so you invest in, like, all the stocks or certain types of stocks, like really any type of stock.
People have religious value ETFs, they have gender equality ETFs, they have environmental ETFs that look at companies that don't pollute.
Jay Jacobs is head of strategy at Global X ETFs. And ETFs aren't just for stocks.
You know, you can invest in stocks, you can invest in bonds, you can invest in commodities.
He said bonds there, and that's important because corporate bonds really were not doing so well after coronavirus hit hard in March.
People were selling. They were scared.
Donald Cohn is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. Investors were just dumping their corporate bonds and the ETFs that were based on them, which meant businesses couldn't issue bonds to raise money. Or if they could, they'd have to pay really high interest rates.
Having high rising interest rates where you're trying to keep businesses going was exactly the wrong thing to have happen.
It was actually looking like a lot of businesses wouldn't make it. Vincent Deluard is global macro strategist at INTL FC Stone. He did an analysis of small cap businesses.
50% of them did not have enough net cash to survive for more than 2 months without access to credit or revenues.
So the Federal Reserve said it would buy corporate debt by buying ETFs full of corporate bonds. Jay Jacobs at Global X.
You know, imagine if you were trying to buy 1,000 different cars. You know, that's kind of a challenge. But if you went to if you just went to the dealership and said, I'm going to buy your entire lot, that's basically what they're doing.
And if the Fed is buying corporate debt and telling businesses you can pay us back at low interest, there's a better chance those businesses will survive. And if those businesses survive, there's a better chance the more than 33 million Americans who've lost their jobs might get rehired sooner. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour for Marketplace.
We have, for years on this program, pointed out that inflation in this economy, while not completely dead, is certainly mostly dead. Today, according to the good people at the Labor Department, it got more dead. This consumer price index fell 0.8% last month, the biggest drop since the Great Recession. The thing is, in a pandemic economy with a lasting demand shock, as we pointed out to you yesterday, how much is that inflation measurement really worth? Marketplace's Kristen Schwab has that one.
The Bureau of Labor Statistics deploys a team of window shoppers every month to check prices of things Americans buy regularly. A loaf of bread, coffee beans, and even vodka. And those prices? CPI data show they've gone up as we cook more at home because of the pandemic. But then there's everything else. Take gas, which fell more than 20%.
This is not surprising, given that people aren't supposed to be out there driving, the airlines aren't flying, a lot fewer trains are running, and so on.
Kit Baum, a professor of economics at Boston College, says demand for so many of the things we buy has gone down, like car insurance and clothing, also part of the CPI. Still, we keep hearing the economy is on pause. So why does any of this matter?
There'll be lots of different kinds of data that will give us different pictures of the post-COVID economy, but one of them will be how prices adjust.
Catherine Dominguez is a professor of economics at the University of Michigan. Once things pick up again, how much prices change will give us an indication of where the economy is headed. And Dominguez says it's not just about the shift in prices. The BLS also tracks what people buy.
It is quite possible that the basket of goods that the average American purchases, even after the lockdowns are all over, differ from what they were before the lockdowns.
The pandemic could continue to impact what we eat, how we get around, and what we buy to entertain ourselves or feel comforted. And that'll impact the economy just as much as what all those things cost. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, not a whole lot of concern about what things were costing. Long, slow slide into the close. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. There's some variability in the American economy right now, right? I mean, there always is, but now more than ever with the virus and the various rules on starting back up again. But as we're learning pretty much every day, opening up does not mean going back to the way things used to be. Ashley Nelson is one of the 10 people we started talking to earlier this year for our series about the American labor force called The United States of Work. She's a hairstylist in Boise, Idaho, where, come Saturday, the 16th, the state government's going to let restaurants and gyms and, yes, hair salons reopen. Precautions, of course, required. Ashley, it's good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you, Kai. Thanks for having me.
So last time we had you on, it was just about the time you had stopped taking appointments. And I want to know, I guess, what you've been doing since, because the governor of Idaho, not long after we chatted, did the whole stay-at-home thing. So what you been up to?
Well, I've been doing a lot of different things. I currently have a new location that I'm going to be working in, so I've been getting settled in that. I have decided to go into a private suite where I will basically just kind of create like another layer of comfort for my clients so that we're just alone and in a room that can be sanitized very well between each client. And then I've been really lucky because our industry has had a lot of free education online, so I've been staying really busy with classes and education, yeah.
How's your order book? Do you have appointments booked starting on the 16th?
I do. Yeah, I have a few weeks booked out already. I had about 170 people I had to get in contact with just to go over the different procedures that we have now about their appointments. So that's been a long process. It took me about 8 hours to get through 60 people. So I have two times that amount to go through.
Wow. But in theory, right, this is all potential revenue, so there's motivation to
make
the call.
Yes, exactly. Most definitely. Hopefully people are just patient with their stylist because so many people are having to get a hold of a lot of clients, and unfortunately we can't all get them in on one day. So hopefully people are being loyal to their people and not just bopping around and trying to find someone who can get them in sooner. But
yeah. Are you going to take people whose appointments you had to cancel back in March? Are you going to take them first, or what are you going to do?
So basically, I made a list starting from March 19th all the way until the 15th of May, and I wrote everyone in order they were on my books, and that's how they're getting called back.
And what's the vibe among your customers? Are they ready to come and have you help them, or are they like, yeah, I'm not ready yet to have somebody touching me?
I would say most people are definitely ready. Some people are definitely pushing it out to June to just be like extra cautious, but I've definitely had a lot of calls to come do house calls and things like that that I haven't done. But yes, I definitely think people are very eager to get their hair done.
Yeah, I'm sure. So how have you been getting by from March to today? Are you just kind of watching your pennies?
Watching my pennies. Luckily, I feel extremely fortunate. My husband, does a manual labor job, so he's able to still work doing hardwood floors. So I feel really lucky to have his help.
Yeah. I remember the first, maybe the second time we talked, we spent a lot of time on you as a business person. And so first of all, you're operating now your own little startup as a business person, but you also have a job that is portable, which seems to me in this economy now to be critical.
Yes. Yeah, it is. I think that the industry, though, is just going to be like leveled up even more because we already had to take so many precautions to be able to take clients in the first place. That's what hair school teaches us about is sanitation. So now it's just another leveled up situation for all of our clients. They're going to be really protected and make sure that they're safe. But I'm actually really excited just to level up my business.
Yeah, no, I bet. Ashley Nelson, she's a hairstylist in Boise, Idaho. Ashley, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You've heard, I'll guess, about the Buy America proposals from the White House trying to bring most, if not all, of our medical supply chain back on shore. There's a letter coming out tomorrow, we got a sneak peek, signed by more than 200 economists urging the Trump administration not to do that. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has today's installment of Adventures in the Law of Unintended Consequences.
White House trade advisor Peter Navarro has been talking about it for weeks now, an executive order that would require government agencies to only buy U.S.-made medical products. Here's Navarro on Fox earlier this month.
Buy American is going to be the law of the land, I believe, soon at HHS, at DOD, at the Veterans Administration.
Navarro didn't respond to my request for comment today, so it's unclear exactly what the Trump administration has in mind. But the Economist letter says a Buy America order could cause even more medical supply shortages. Brian Riley at the National Taxpayers Union, which spearheaded the letter campaign, says the executive order could apply to
anything that could be classified as personal protective equipment, from hand sanitizer to medical gowns.
The letter says the order would also push up the cost of medical supplies and possibly drugs for consumers. Syracuse University economist Mary Lovely, who signed the letter, says just look at the prices of medical supplies from China that were, until recently, subject to 25% U.S. tariffs.
So on average, prices rose between 25 and 30%.
But other economists, like Christine Reese of the Georgia Institute of Technology, would be okay with a Buy America order if it included price controls in exchange for subsidies or tax breaks.
The company would have to certify that, yes, this was Buy America, and yes, they were keeping the price at the same levels that it had been when China was supplying.
The Buy America debate isn't limited to economists. There are signs of considerable disagreement at the White House over Navarro's proposal. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Coming up,
people want to tune in just to see someone who's that good.
Raise your hand if you like watching other people play video games. It's a thing. People, a big thing. But first, let's do the numbers. Kind of a last-minute sell-off today. Dow Industrial's down 457, about 1.8%, 23,764. The NASDAQ declined 189 points, 2%, 9,002. The S&P 500 off 60, also 2%. 28 and 70 there. Today's numbers are all about going places and the places that we go. Toyota said it expects an 80% drop in profit for the current fiscal year. Toyota slid 1.9% today. Hertz plunged 9%. It says it has doubts about whether it can continue as a going concern. That's a big deal because it's basically accountant speak for whether the company can stay in business. Virgin Galactic down 9.2% today. It will sell a slice of its space exploration unit to improve the health of Virgin Group's travel and tourism business. You're listening to Marketplace. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Dave Calhoun, the CEO of Boeing, told the Today Show this morning he thinks it's likely, that's his word, that a major U.S. airline goes out of business this year. After making that prediction, Calhoun said he didn't want to get too predictive on the subject, but come on, that's a mouthful coming from a guy whose company sells airplanes. So, from the Marketplace desk of what might a post-coronavirus economy look like anyway, Marketplace's Andy Euler has today's aviation dispatch.
According to the trade group Airlines for America, passenger traffic at airports is down more than 90% right now.
airlines are the caboose on the economic train. The economic train stopped, they got stopped.
That's Mike Boyd. He runs an aviation consultancy.
How they come back, where they come back, will depend on how the economy comes back and the shape the economy comes back in.
Southwest Airlines says it expects to lose $30 to $35 million a day. American says it's trying to cut its losses to $50 million a day by next month. Rob Mark, a commercial pilot and aviation industry blogger, says most airlines are worried about having enough cash on hand to make good on lease payments at airports.
Some airlines are stronger than others. And I think, although we thought we would have no more mergers after the last round, I think we're going to find that somebody is going to fail.
Mark says if there is any consolidation, it will eventually mean more expensive airfares. Gary Leff writes the travel blog View from the Wing. He says that could be compounded by pressure to accommodate more room between passengers on flights because of COVID-19.
Dividing that space among fewer passengers is going to mean both actually fewer flights and an average higher average fare.
Last month, some airlines started getting federal grants and loans. Those were meant to allow them to pay employees through the end of September. Leff says once that funding runs out, we'll have a clearer sense of where the industry's headed. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
This virus doesn't care what your business model is, doesn't care whether you're not for profit or very much for, you're getting hit. Universities over in the UK, it turns out, usually do pretty well in recessions, but this time, as the saying goes, is different. The United Kingdom is second only to the US in the number of foreign students it enrolls, almost 20% of its entire student body. And the critical unknown right now over there is how many of them are coming back next term. From the university town of Oxford, Marketplace's Stephen Beard is on the story.
On a serene spring evening, a chapel bell rings out across the grounds of an Oxford college, a picture of peace and calm. But the picture's misleading. The college is deserted. All the universities across Britain are largely closed, and many are fretting about the potential loss of a vital source of revenue.
International students are absolutely critical to the financial well-being of our universities.
Nick Hillman of the Higher Education Policy Institute.
Pretty much everything British universities do loses money, except for recruiting international students.
Who pay, on average, more than $6,000 a year, more than it costs to educate them. A total profit of $3 billion a year, creamed off by British academia. And now the question, occupying some of the country's finest minds, will that profit evaporate come the fall?
Who knows if the airlines will be flying, and who knows if those international students due to arrive this autumn will actually get on a plane and arrive.
And will they want to come anyway? The largest group of foreign students in Britain is the Chinese, and some of them have not had a great time here since the pandemic began. Robin Zhang at Cardiff University told Sky News about one incident.
Four guys standing next to the door shouting at me and my friend Lucy here. We're walking together saying, hey, coronavirus, and they're laughing out loud.
There have been some cases of physical attacks too, but what alarmed PhD student Sophie Wushang Yi when she arrived back in the UK in February was, she says, the slack British attitude to the pandemic compared with China's rigour.
My temperature was checked three or four times even before I stepped on the plane in China. And when I landed in the UK, no one checked my temperature, no one cares, and not even the border staff.
And her parents back in China were even more alarmed.
Wearing a face mask every day and seeing no one wears face masks in the UK, that really worries them.
In spite of her parents' worries, Sophie's determined to resume her studies in the UK in the fall. But if large numbers of Chinese and other foreign students stay away next term for whatever reason, the consequences could be dire.
It could be pretty catastrophic for many universities.
Vivian Stern of Universities UK, the main trade body for British academia.
For some universities, it could mean closure. It could mean a managed merger with other institutions.
But not, it must be said, for Britain's oldest and most prestigious universities.
Doctoris in Philosophia, Elizabeth Baldwin,
a Collegio di Balliola.
900-year-old Oxford University, where the graduation ceremony is still conducted in Latin, will certainly survive intact. So will its closest rival, Cambridge. Their vast endowments will make sure of that. But foreign students make up around 40% of the student body of both these ancient universities, so they too will suffer a substantial hit if the pandemic drives a lot of those foreigners away. In Oxford, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Whatever the state of the getting back to business process is where you are, the fact is a lot of us, no matter where we are still staying home, voluntarily or not. And that means passing time when not working from home or helping educate your kids from home or stressing about being stuck at home is a major pastime. Netflix and Hulu and all the rest have seen big spikes, of course, but there is another streaming platform out there having a moment. Twitch is probably best known as the place where you can watch other people play video games in real time, as it happens. But the company wants to be more than just games. Emmett Shear is the CEO of Twitch. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Let's talk core business here. People watching people play video games, I imagine now, with all of us locked in our living rooms for 6 weeks, or many of us anyway, think the numbers are probably pretty good.
Yeah. We've seen a pretty significant increase in usage. It's a 57% increase for the 4 weeks post-social distancing versus pre-social distancing.
So if I'm a gamer of some renown, I like sign up with you guys and you give me access to services. I mean, how does it work?
Really, anyone can show up and just start streaming. Of course, you know, we go and try to convince anyone who's a really great gamer to stream with Twitch. But anybody can just sign up and start sharing their video gaming experience or increasingly their music creation experience or their cooking experience with the world.
What are the barriers to entry here? I mean, I imagine, right, so like I can start my cooking channel or my, here's a thought, a beer making channel, right? First of all, do they call them channels? What do they call them? Channels, streams? What
do we call them channels. That's right. Channels. Sometimes people call it their stream, but we call them channels.
Okay. So me, Joel Blow, I can start up a home beer brewing channel and eventually gather followers. Do you imagine me being able to make a living from this without getting to the ultra extreme expertise level that some of your gamers now are at?
So there's really two ways you can grow your channel. The first one is being maybe not the best in the world, but up there, one of the best in the world. So people want to tune in just to see someone who's that good stream. The other way you can grow your channel has not really anything to do with expertise. Maybe you're good, maybe you're not good, but you're entertaining. Bob Ross isn't famous for being the best painter of all time, right? He's not famous for being Matisse. He's famous because he's entertaining to watch and he connects with the audience. I would imagine with a beer brewing channel, engaging probably would be the way to go. I'm not sure how you demonstrate your beer brewing skill on stream. But we actually find that in the long run, that engagement is the way to go.
For those who don't know who Bob Ross is, by the way, Google him and you'll see exactly what Emmett was talking about. So here we are in a period where you almost literally have a captive audience, which is great for your business. It's great for the people who partake of Twitch, both the streamers, if you will, the people providing the content and the people watching. Eventually, this economy is going to open back up to some degree. How worried are you about losing ground?
I'm not really that worried about it. Like I'm really hoping for the economy to open up again quickly. You know, it has been good for Twitch because with everyone sheltering at home, we have a lot more need for our service suddenly. People need to connect online, they need to find community. And I think a lot of people will find once they start using Twitch that this is a good supplement to their, you know, real-world engagement.
Emmett Shear, he's the CEO of Twitch. Emmett, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
This final note on the way out today, Molly and I talked about this a bit on Make Me Smart. That's the daily podcast we do together, trying to make today make sense is what we say. Check it out if you get a minute. Anyway, Jack Dorsey, the CEO of Twitter, sent an all-staff note today saying basically, hey, you like working at home? Keep on doing it forever, which is honestly kind of a big deal. Molly's point, though, was, I think, the best one. Why would you want to deal with the traffic into and out of San Francisco if you didn't have to, Okay, we are out of here. Here is your moment of economic context to take with you. The National Federation of Independent Businesses was out with its monthly survey results today. The upshot? Well, it's going to be a grim 6 months in the small business economy. Lousy sales, all that stuff we have been talking about. 6 months from now, though, expectations are things are going to be all right, in part because of what Congress and the Fed have been doing. Our digital and on-demand team includes Carrie Barber, Samantha Fields, Ben Hethcote, Sarah Menendez, Eliza Mills, and Janet Wynn. Sitar Nieves is our executive director of on-demand. And I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.